This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. The Cincinnati Charter, adopted by voters in 1926, is the city's constitution, essentially. It governs every aspect of how Cincinnati is governed and how it operates. The 24-member Cincinnati Charter Review Task Force has already started work on its job to review and update the charter. Task Force Co-Chairman Mike Morgan and attorney John Kerp, who served 5 years as Cincinnati City Solicitor, join us to look at how the group is going about that process of reviewing the city's charter. You can join the conversation. Our phone number is 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Coming up later, we'll discuss hazardous material accidents in the region. But for now, we're going to talk about the city charter and a review of it. Again, if you have a question, 513-419-7100. Mike, let me begin with you. We said that you're the co-chair of this task force, and your work has already started.
It has.
So tell us where you are in that process, what's been done, and maybe in the next few weeks, what's going to be happening.
Process all started with a motion from City Council that effectively said there will be a task force and provided no further instruction. So that's where we started, with building the kind of basic infrastructure of what this task force was, what it meant, what its role was. And so to date, what we have done is go through the charter line by line as a group and just list all of the potential issues. And those range from simply obsolete language, very non-controversial things, to the real hot button issues. And we've taken that list of, I think, 131 different potential issues in the charter. We've divided those up into committees. We are in the process today, actually, of notifying the members of the task force of what committee structure is going to be, who's going to be on what committee. And then all of those people are going to be given the job of collecting data and holding public forums to discuss these topics, to really kind of bring in the information that's needed to have a large-scale public conversation about charter reform, and, you know, with a focus on the really big issues.
The 131 issues, how many of those would you say are maybe simple, no-brainer issues as opposed to the really hot button that could create some controversy?
There are a lot more landmines than there are simple things. The simple things actually are so simple for the most part that we anticipate having some charter cleanup on the ballot this November.
And those are things like, I think the charter says that, doesn't it still reference the city and the University of Cincinnati, the city and General Hospital, right, which hasn't existed.
Correct.
Those relationships haven't existed for a long time.
Right. We have a rapid transit commission that runs the subway that, you know, I don't, as I recall, I don't think they got that off the ground sometime back in the 20s.
Who are these people, the 24 people? I know they're volunteers, I mean, but what kind of backgrounds are, how diverse a committee is this?
They have been selected with the intention of providing connection to a lot of different opinions and a lot of different connections within the communities. So the idea of this initial task force is to select people based on the diversity of the group of people themselves, in terms of who they represent in the community, what they represent politically, you know, what their kind of known views are on some of these issues. So balance has been the idea. And the real goal and purpose of this task force is not that these 24 people have been ordained to rewrite the charter. It's that this group of people is going to help facilitate a public conversation.
And John, I know you wanted to get something in there, but let me say you were solicitor until January of this year, and you left city employment as of July the 1st. So you're now just a private attorney in Cincinnati, no longer connected with the city.
That's correct. And change can be reinvigorating, and I'm excited to be back in the business world.
I know you and I have, in long meetings when we were killing time at City Hall, talked about legal things, and the charter came up occasionally, and you said, you know, this thing needs to be reviewed. But you also would always qualify that saying, yeah, it needs to be reviewed, but you could open up a bigger can of worms by starting such a review.
Yeah, and I think it's important that when we review the committee, there are many anachronisms in the charter. It was written in 1926. Unlike most municipalities in the state, we don't have regular reviews of our charter. Many cities have, every 10 years, a committee that meets and makes recommendations on changes. We've never done that. It's been amended piece by piece, sometimes through referendum that weren't necessarily written with a political agenda, not with in context of a charter that was written 70 years before that. And we create many contradictions within the charter, within amendments, that's created legal issues for the city for decades. So it's good that we sit down and review these issues and go through them one for one. Some are very simple. Again, the University Hospital, UC recommendation, just correcting titles. Office directors within the city, we no longer have a public works director anymore, public services director. Making those changes will make things easier, take the simple legal issues off the table. But apart from that, the other ones are big items. The document that was written in 1926 was written in a much different context in city politics than now. We were fighting a political patronage system in the city that was leading to corruption, and the drafters wanted to fight those issues, create a city government, create a professional civil service. And if we look at if we're looking at those issues in these charter committee and these charter changes, that's a much more serious discussion at a different level.
Do you agree that with what Mike said, that there could potentially be a lot more landmines than simple issues?
Well, I think so. There are many groups out there. I mean, we got to look at frankly, the political parties would benefit, for example, if we decide to go to strong mayor. The charter committee for decades has been the protector of professional city government, city manager form of government. Whether we go to strong mayor or keep professional city management, that's a big issue. And that works with, well, what are we looking at going forward from there? Combining city services with the county or other jurisdictions, we have two different systems of government that we would want to work together. Can these charter changes foresee how we can merge, share services, for example, with the county when we have two fundamentally different types of government involved? So those are big picture issues that need to be dealt with and have a broader community conversation that may take much more than 6 months or a year.
I'm sure there are people on the committee who are going to argue for a strong mayor form of government, basically get rid of city manager form of government. And as you said, back in the 1920s, these reformers, the original charter committee, put together this city manager form of government for a reason. Now, are you going to have to find within this committee a consensus, a majority, to recommend something as major as a strong mayor form of government?
Each one of these committees will make a recommendation to the full task force, and the full task force will make a recommendation to council. But those recommendations are going to take the form of a majority and minority opinion with facts and findings and rationale. So they're not going to be a simple statement that, we recommend X version of strong mayor. We're going to present data. And city council at that point can then accept our majority recommendations, our minority recommendations. They can radically change what we have recommended. And the other possibility is that people in the public can start their own process of initiative while this process is occurring. So we face a possibility that, whether it be in 2015 or 2016, we could have competing charter amendments in the next couple of elections.
Well, I want to be careful when we're talking about strong mayor. That's sometimes used interchangeably with this idea of an executive mayor. Potentially, you would make the mayor the top administrative person in the city, he could have a city manager, so to speak, under him, but basically all administrative power would sort of rest with the mayor.
Well, as the charter is written now, the mayor is not the city's chief executive. It exists essentially as a super speaker of the House. he or she has authority to appoint members of committees, control the introduction of legislation, but does not have any executive authority. Only the city manager can bind the city on contracts, can administer the civil service. So we've created this super, I call it the super speaker of the House, who doesn't have a vote. And sometimes people are confused about really who has the authority at City Hall to make those types of executive decisions. The city manager is supposed to be, under professional city government, an independent executive.
And by good timing, I guess, today, your former deputy, Aaron Herzig, had an editorial in the paper. That was one of the things that he said needed to be clarified in any charter process was that, you know, what is the mayor's role?
And I don't disagree with him. I think he advocated for a stronger mayor government. I disagree. I think there's still room in Cincinnati for professional management government, and we need to look at other cities, and that's why something as big as that, we need to look across the country. It's what's working and what's not. Some of the largest cities in the country have professional city government, and it works very well there. Phoenix is one example, Dallas, Texas, Fort Worth. Those are some big cities that have professional city government. So we have to kind of choose as a community what form of government we want and how we want it to run, because I always make the point that if we make the city, the mayor, the chief executive of the city, and eliminate and make him the appointee of all the unclassified civil service, that's the largest patronage job in this community. That's over 800 jobs. Now, that's for others, for the community to decide whether we want to have a political appointee system like we do with the county, or do we want to have one that an independent civil service that doesn't participate in the political process?
We're discussing an effort to review and update the Cincinnati City Charter. Our guests are Task Force Co-Chairman Mike Morgan and Attorney John Kerp, who was formerly the Cincinnati City Solicitor and is now in private practice. If you have a question, 513-419-7100. And in all this, we want to be clear, you can recommend changes, but in the end, the buck stops on this one with the voters.
Absolutely. This task force is primarily going to collect information and facilitate a public discussion. This task force has zero authority to actually change the charter. That's going to be up to voters. But, you know, just having this conversation, I think, is critical. And John raises the issue of city manager and stronger mayor and what that does and does not mean. And there's a lot of nuance to those positions. But it's important that people understand that what we have right now is just a lot of confusion. We went to a stronger mayor, quote unquote, system in 1999. And what most of the people that were part of that system all agree about today is that it's not what they intended back in 1999. It was kind of a cobbled together compromise. And so what power the mayor should or should not have is something that the citizens of Cincinnati should decide on. And they should make that decision based on policy and outcome and good data and models in other cities. What they should not have is a government that is defined largely by kind of accident and compromise and a couple examples of poor drafting back in 1999.
If these major pieces end up on the ballot, let's say a stronger mayor, executive mayor, you said there could be competing proposals, charter amendments on the ballot, and I can envision a scenario. What if they both pass? So if you have two competing proposals, and believe me, I've seen city council votes where they both things passes, then they're left in confusion. If you had two competing proposals to reform the government system and they both passed, then what do you do?
John may be able to correct me, but I think that's happened before.
Yeah.
And that what the court does is look at your actual total number of...
So whichever one passed by more.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. There's a legal process to solve contradictory terms.
But at that point, you would probably be glad that you're the former solicitor and not the current solicitor.
Right.
One thing about strong mayor, an executive mayor, in one sense, it might have some appeal to city council members because it would kind of set them free. They would no longer be controlled by The agenda would not be controlled by the mayor. The committee chairmanships would not be controlled by the mayor. They could organize themselves, have a president of council that they choose among themselves. I mean, that would be appealing, I would think, to some council members.
Yeah, I think so, because what we have is a contradiction between we have, you know, the mayor is really part of the legislative branch, but he has no vote, he has no power, but the power he has is to control the how the legislature does its business.
Yeah, the agenda.
Right, which could be very frustrating, and many people referred to this as the pocket veto of the mayor, but he can almost indefinitely hold legislation from being introduced to council, and that's proved to be very frustrating to council members over the years. So, you know, taking the mayor as out of that mix, I think, is empowering to council.
He also has the authority to initiate the firing of the city manager. So it brings into question how much of this theory of an independent city manager is reality and how much of the city manager's office is really just a further extension of the mayor's office under another name.
I know this could be a touchy subject, so I'll be careful how I ask this, but there are some, at least a couple of council members that I know that believe that our current mayor is already acting as an executive mayor.
Well, I've always said that the checks and balances exist within the system, and frankly, council has the ability to control that. They control the budget, they control the appointment of the next manager, and that's where they can exercise their authority. Now, where the changes in 99 upset that balance is, in the past, the council, if they were unhappy with the performance of the city manager, by a simple vote of 5-4, could discharge the manager. They can't do that anymore, not without the initiation of the mayor. So what we've done is empower the city manager to frankly serve one person once he's appointed. So once you get through that interview, once you get your five votes, you're no longer, as the manager, directly accountable to the council, except through the mayor. And again, the mayor has no more authority as the executive other than to preside over council. So it did upset the balance that most communities have over their city manager.
One other thing that Aaron Herzig mentioned in his editorial this morning, besides clarifying the mayor, was this idea of ending the field race for council members, and basically, I would assume, in some fashion, dividing the city up into districts or at-large seats where there would be a head-to-head race between candidate A and candidate B to represent a certain district. Mike, you're nodding your head.
That's definitely on that list of 131 different things.
Yeah.
And we have talked about districts in Cincinnati for a while, and it's been proposed in the past, and it simply hasn't happened. But, you know, without expressing any of my own opinions, I think that it is definitely time to revisit it and to at least talk about the pros and cons of districts and possibly a hybrid system with at-large seats. And I think that it's particularly important to discuss that now in light of the things that are going on with campaign finance reform. I mean, what does that mean to a 9X system these days, that there's almost no limitation placed on the money that can come into political races? Does that change the dynamic of a 9X system? Does it make districts more or less appropriate? I'm not sure, but I think that we have to have those questions and ask what is going to serve the city best in generations to come.
John?
Well, I would add that I think we have to watch. I think the political parties have a very keen interest in the way this is set up. I think the idea of a stronger executive mayor is that, you know, in a city dominated by Democrats, every now and then you might get a Mayor Bloomberg type who could pick off that seat, control the jobs, control the office, control the agenda over majority members of Democrats that control council. The same type of balance exists when you go to proportional voting, whether you go to districts or head-to-head. It's much easier to pick off someone head-to-head than it would be in a field race. How do you impact minority representation on council if you go head-to-head versus a field race? Those are things that are very fraught with a lot of politics. And again, the system adopted in 1926 was not the one we have now. there was the proportional representation voting then. Very complicated mathematical formula to determine the people who sat on council. So that's not been something that's been consistent over the last 70, 80 years, but it's something fraught with a lot of political implications and upsets the balance that we have now.
But over the years I've been here, I mean, there have been several attempts at trying to draw such a map of districts, and it's a very difficult thing to do, to have, you know, balance, you know, racially, economically, you know. It would be quite a task.
Well, and you're looking into a committee to draw districts, and, you know, historically our city has defined parties to include the charter committee.
Right.
So how do we, you know, we have to consider how we strike a balance between a Democrat, Republican representatives, independents, and a charter committee that historically has had its own independent role in that, and that'd be very challenging.
Is this typical in other cities that of course, Howard's been here longer than I have, but I'm starting to get some age now, too, unfortunately. But it seems like we're always tinkering. We're never quite happy with the Cincinnati form of government. We're always, you know, trying to figure out a way to tinker with it. Stronger mayor. Recently, the council terms went from 2 years to 4 years. You know, now there could be, you know, districts changing that. Do other cities tinker as much as Cincinnati tinkers?
I think part of our problem is that, as John mentioned earlier, other cities have processes of doing kind of a proactive review on a regular basis. We tinker so much because we haven't done a serious, holistic look at the charter since the 20s. So I don't know, and John or Howard, you know, can probably answer what other places do a lot better than I can, but I think that our problem here, and the reason for all that tinkering, is that we haven't gone through this process of really examining the totality of our municipal government for 90 years.
And when you're talking about that, such a review, is that something that you could consider adding as one of the reforms, that every 10 years, every 15 years, and every 20 years, there's this built-in review process?
Adding a process for review and actually adding into our charter a process for amending the charter, which is currently not in it, are both on the list. And I think, and I'll share my opinion on those. I think that's a good idea.
Now, and if any of these are to go through, there's two ways to get them in front of voters. Council would have to vote by 6 votes, I believe, to place a charter amendment on the ballot, or citizens could collect signatures and put any reforms on the ballot.
That's correct.
Would this be individual items on the ballot, or would this be a package? I mean, how do you envision this, you know?
What we want to make sure as a task force we do not do is move forward initiatives that are pieces of a package that need to move together. And I don't think I said that very articulately, but this tinkering with our charter has been the problem. We make changes without regard for how it affects other aspects of municipal government. So there is going to be at least a package that comes out of this. Maybe it's 2 or 3 packages, but anything that affects the balance of power needs to examine that balance of power and make proposed changes in the totality of how council interacts with the mayor, et cetera.
Are there some policy things that have been added to the charter that perhaps aren't appropriate to be in the charter by voters? I'm thinking, I think there's the city can't use red light cameras, can't create a water district, can't charge a trash fee.
Well, I certainly think to some extent part of the issues that we've created is this legislation by referendum. We've amended the charter. Something the committee should probably look at is, do we want to create a different threshold to bring matters to the ballot or not? Some would argue that that's inhibiting the people's ability to impact their government. Some would argue that actually makes it more secure because we're not every year to year making these changes that create these issues. But that's certainly important.
Before our time is up, you're the one who has most recently had to figure this thing out, defend it in court. What your best case scenario, if you were on the committee, what would you be pushing for in charter reform?
Well, I think we need to get, I like the idea of this holistic approach on a regular basis. We certainly quickly need to clean up the anachronisms, the things that just don't make sense anymore. I would hope that the big issues stay separate so that we can, as a community, have a much bigger discussion on where we want the balance of power to lie between the executive and legislative branches. And I think, Kevin Flynn's leadership on this issue and his history with the Charter Committee, I think, lends itself to there being a thoughtful process.
Mike, I'll give you the final word. How can the public get involved in this if they want to stay informed and know what's going on?
We are going to be posting a series of public forums. There's a website that the task force has, and it is mycharterreform.org.
And you'll find a link to that on our website, too.
There'll be a link to that on the website. And people can go right there and provide direct input. There's a poll on there right now. And there's a calendar that's pretty sparse at the moment. But in the next several weeks, we'll list public forums. And so public participation is going to be really critical to the success of this.
And I bet some of these real simple things, if they're to be on the ballot this fall, that would be something that council would have to act on in either August or September so they could make the November ballot.
Prior to September 6.
We've been discussing an effort to review and update the Cincinnati City Charter. Task Force is engaged in that process right now. Our guests were Task Force Co-Chairman Mike Morgan and Attorney John Kerp, who served 5 years as Cincinnati City Solicitor. Thank you both for being here this afternoon.
My pleasure.
It.